Brad Wheatless, ABC News.
This is Tony Pan. The forecast for tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies. There'll be a chance for rain showers. Low temperatures dropping into the upper 40s to around 50. Rain is likely on Monday, especially in the morning. It'll be breezy and cool with high temperatures only in the upper 50s. Still a chance for rain showers on Tuesday. Highs will be in the upper 50s and low 60s. A slight chance for showers on Wednesday. Still breezy and cool with high temperatures in the upper 50s. From the WCBM Weather Center, this is Tony Pan.
Radio 680 WCBM.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
It must be time for Zoe. Every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m., you'll find Zohara Hieronymus hosting 21st Century Radio right here on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Peanut butter sandwich made with jam. One for me and one for David Amram. A peanut butter sandwich made with jam. Stick, stick, sticky, stick, stick.
Well, welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Boy, that brings back memories to when Anna was a little girl. Do you remember Worms Made My Lunch? Worms Made My Lunch. Rafi sang that too. This is Rafi, I believe. Continuing on with our long history and involvement since 1969 in the environmental movement, in organic farming, biodynamic growing, and all things good for us, including autonomy for the private rancher, we continue with our discussion tonight about current legislation, issues that concern us all, and get the straight scoop instead of hysterics. Judith McGeary joins us this portion of 21st Century to continue this discussion about the use of land in America for farming and how it's regulated. And ranching, I have to add, she will highlight for us as the executive director of a Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance in Austin, Texas, issues they're concerned about relative to the legislation in Congress and longtime federal and state practices with regard to one of my favorite subjects, private land use and farming practices on that private land. Judith, thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure, and it was so interesting to me that you gave up your legal practice and an attorney after doing it for many years to become the executive director of the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance. Why did you do that?
Well, I'd gotten into sustainable agriculture about a decade ago. I'm still a relative newcomer, and I believe really strongly that this is our future, but whether it's for human health or the environment. There are just so many reasons that small, sustainable farms is where we need to go.
Yes, and it's so funny. It's where the whole planet has come from.
Exactly. And it's not just a return to our past because we can layer so many fascinating new discoveries onto it, but it's still, as you say, it's where we came from. So there's still a tie to our traditions. And I saw regulations that were literally going to make it impossible. You know, mm-hmm. We have a small farm ourselves, and I thought about what it would mean, and we couldn't keep our farm, and neither could the hundreds of farmers that we know who do this type of small, sustainable farming.
What does your organization, the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, focus on?
Our main issue is actually the National Animal Identification System, which is basically an electronic tagging and tracking plan for all livestock and poultry.
Meaning every chicken and every cow and every... whatever?
Exactly. It's not hysterics on this end to say it literally applies to, you know, somebody who's got a couple of chickens in their backyard.
Wow.
And so that's been the issue we've focused on. And really what's interesting about the food safety bills is we've been warning for a couple of years now, you know, watch out, folks. They're going to come out with an NAIS for produce. For
what does NAIS mean? That's the
National Animal ID System.
I see. And you're saying they're going to be tracking our spinach with little tags.
Exactly. And, you know, we look at these food safety bills, mm-hmm. and especially H.R. 759, and
right.
lo and behold, they're talking electronic tagging and tracking of all produce.
Now, the H.R. 759 is one we've not touched on. That's the FDA Globalization Act of 2009 that Congressman Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, has introduced. So tell us about that. That's a fancy title for something that doesn't sound like I like it. I didn't read the bill yet.
agreed on all fronts. And I think the previous guest for Food and Water Watch touched on it very briefly.
Tony Corbo.
Exactly.
No, we actually didn't get that far. We got to SB 510, or is that the same?
They're not the same, but there are some similarities.
Okay.
H.R. 759 is, among other things, the one that would require electronic tracking. Mm. So, by the way, you know, the latest census came back and it says that 48% of farmers don't have internet access.
Right. I remember reading a report by somebody who's in philanthropy about that.
Exactly. And yet, here's this bill that's quite likely to move forward. H.R. 759 is the bill that everyone's kind of expecting will be the vehicle to move it forward in the House that would require electronic tagging and tracking. So,
and what would that mean to somebody in the listening audience who maybe they have, you know, 12 chickens, which I'm going to have soon, to have fresh organic eggs that are kosher, which I've discovered. Well, anyway, that's another subject. What would it mean to somebody that has just a bunch of chickens?
So let me separate two things. The National Animal ID System, which is something we've been fighting for several years mm-hmm. now, would mean that you'd have to physically tag your chickens and give them a 15-digit internationally unique ID number, register your property, tie those two numbers together in a federal database, and then anytime your chicken, you know, died or you bought a new one or you gave one to your neighbor or what have you, you'd have to report it within
24 hours. There is no discrimination in a positive sense between these massive agri-chicken farms, the poultry producers versus the small-time farmer or the organic chicken grower?
Actually, it's exactly the reverse. The big factory farms get to use a group identification.
Oh, that's so marvelous. Actually, the ones we all actually eat don't get identified, but the ones that we have in our own homes that we personally might eat or have eggs are the ones identified.
Exactly. So it's a completely backwards
that's
system.
Insane.
So that's NAIS, National Animal ID System, that we've
and this
been
is part
on.
Of the H.R. 759 that we don't want.
Now, 759 actually doesn't hit USDA. It just covers FDA.
I see.
But it would set up, we predict, a very similar system for produce.
Oh, geez.
So when people would, you know, a small farmer would harvest a batch of carrots, they'd have to file electronic records showing, you know, this batch was harvested on such and such a date, and this is who it was sold to, or, you know, this is what happened to it. So when you think about electronic record keeping, think about the expense of computers,
sure,
of software updates.
Well, and the ease with which it can be manipulated to say anything.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to game,
we've seen that in voting when there was no paper trail. Oh, gee, we just don't know how, you know, George Bush became elected. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, and that's some of the fundamental flaws with a lot of this mm-hmm. whole craze for traceability in general,
mm-hmm.
which is it doesn't stop somebody who wants to cause harm or who even just wants to get away with making money and doesn't care whether they cause harm or not.
Right, like the peanut company that just did that.
Exactly.
American Peanut Corporation.
For huge factories, for huge businesses, it's very cheap to keep these records.
Right.
Now, they've got the computer.
Well, and if you point out that they're doing batch, you know, a batch number for, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, 100 chickens or whatever, versus somebody with 10 who has to tag each one. I mean, it's insane. And when you look at this notion of identification and this traceability to in the produce markets, what is, you had pointed out, and I love your writings on the subjects, by the way, and all the wonderful resources you point people to from your website, which is www.farmandranchfreedom.org. You point out, it's something I brought up with our other guest, Steve Gilman of the Northeast Organic Farming Association and Tony Corbo of Food and Water Watch, is that the national or federal legislation does not distinguish between these enormous industrial centralized food components and the smaller state or county sustainable local food system.
Exactly. What we're seeing is a huge growth in the sustainable local food system for a lot of reasons, including the fact that people feel that it's safer. People want to know the farmer they're buying from.
Right, exactly.
But these systems are based on what works for the industrial factory system. Because that, frankly, is who most congressmen talk to 90%
mm-hmm.
of the time.
Who spend the millions on them and give them the parties and fly them around. And even though they're not supposed to, they do.
Exactly. And just by nature of who you hear from, even if you're well-intentioned, if that's who you hear from day in, day out, that's how you write your laws.
That's true.
And so they keep doing this, and they don't understand. We actually had a conversation with one staffer, nice guy, well-intentioned, who thought that all the small farmers at the farmers markets were already keeping records of everyone they sold a dozen eggs to.
Oh, my gosh. You know, obviously he's never been to a farmer's market.
You know, when you're at a farmer's market, you're not taking down the name, address, and phone number of everyone who stops and pays $3 for a dozen eggs.
Well, and when you speak in this frame of reference, when you lobby before Congress, which I did for many decades at the state and federal level, and I, too, had that awful experience of only most of the time finding and working with staff who actually are often more informed than the congressmen themselves. What is the slant of Congress under this administration? I mean, the Bush administration was a whole nother creature, and the Clinton administration was, you know, a fox in sheep's clothing.
Well, unfortunately, I think I don't want to make too many judgments. It's still early days, but I was up, actually, we had a meeting with Secretary Vilsack, the new USDA secretary, last week. And unfortunately, I was really disappointed that he started off talking extensively about the importance of the export market.
Well, see, this is the problem
we've all looked at. Yeah. This is food. We are a net importer. We need to worry about our food supply in this country.
And that's an issue we haven't even touched on, that a nation that cannot produce enough food for its own people is really held hostage to whatever nation is exporting to us.
Exactly.
And whether it's Mexico or China or some other country.
Exactly. And so, unfortunately, too many folks in Congress, and I think to some extent still this administration, see food as simply another commodity.
Right.
And if we get it from Mexico or China, that's fine.
Except that what we know for a fact, and one of the things I've brought up with each of our guests and have for 30-some years, particularly under the Clinton administration's passage of GATT and NAFTA, is that enabled the foreign companies to send their produce and their animal goods to this country without the same safety requirements that our own farmers and ranchers are required to meet.
Exactly. I mean, it makes no sense to take a struggling American farmer and impose all sorts of expensive requirements on them so that they go out of business and then you import the food from China. I mean, it's an insane plan, and it seems to be still where they're going. And that's been one of the things, going back to sort of the original topic you guys contacted me on and have been talking about tonight, H.R. 875. I've been concerned about this focus on that one bill because, you know, regardless of which bill it is, there's an underlying mindset we've got to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think has to be communicated to Congress.
And one of the things I've never understood in all the decades I've been doing this work is why we don't have representatives and senators who understand that food is also a national security issue. I mean, they're worried about bioterrorism and somebody dumping a germ out in the fields. I'm worried about our not having the ability to any longer make food that sustains our lives.
Absolutely. And the centralization of our food supply makes it incredibly vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's something they've been told. There's report after
report. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But they don't deal with it.
And so what does your organization, you know, kind of engage the general person in? And when you represent, I mean, one of the things for me has always been the identification of citizens' rights, first as citizens of state, and then secondly, the infringement on that autonomy and oversight of state legislation with federal legislation.
Well, there are several things. One is we think that people have a fundamental right to raise food for themselves, that the government does not have a place in interfering with people's ability to raise food. Now, once you start selling, then we can start talking regulations.
Right, right.
But if it's in your backyard and it's your family's food, get out.
And is there any legislation, as the rumor suggests, currently that would interfere with the private grower?
Well, right now, the food safety bills wouldn't. I keep going back, of course, to my pet issue, which is NAIS. You know,
uh-huh.
That's our core.
That's the National Animal Tracking
Identification
System.
And that would. And so these food safety bills don't. But the food safety bills would start infringing at the federal, taking federal government oversight onto potentially very small-scale farms.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who are selling in their counties, in their local farmers' markets.
And even, I've read, even determining that whether or not a dairy market could stay open or a goat cheese factory could exist.
I think it doesn't actually govern farmers markets. I think that's one of the pieces that has been sort of the rumor mill without substance.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly small production facilities, like people who are making cheeses,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, could potentially fall within the scope of these bills. And it's not that they absolutely would, but they certainly haven't been excluded. And given the agency's history,
right.
Our FDA and USDA both like picking, frankly, on small farmers and small producers because we're not the ones they're going to get jobs with later. They don't want to go after the large production facilities because that's who might give them jobs when they leave the agency.
Well, and we see that revolving door, whether it's a lobbyist who becomes a government agent. I mean, we talked a little earlier about Michael Taylor, you know, going in and out of administrations, then to Monsanto, and maybe now being up for some important position. I mean, you're in Texas, in Austin, Texas. I mean, these guys, you're a different breed of American. I mean, there's such strength, and I've worked with Acres USA out of Kansas for many years, and I believe they suggested we get in touch with you. So I know you're of like stripe as we are here in Owings Mills, Maryland, that there is a sanctity to private property, and to me that's the cornerstone of constitutional law in this country that is constantly being eroded either by some sort of, you know, infringement by the local municipality who wants it to sell because they can get better taxes, or, as you're pointing out, interference, whether it's federal or state. What would be the alternative, or what would be things that should be argued to be inserted into these legislative initiatives?
Well, the first thing is I think they just simply need to exempt small farms.
Mm-hmm.
There just needs to be a very clear exemption.
Is there a statutory description of what is a small farm?
Well, that's something we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
There's one definition from USDA that's anyone who grosses under 250,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's one definition, which may be workable. On the other hand, to give it context, I know farmers who gross, let's say, 300,000 who net their profit is 20,000 to 30,000.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at,
so it should
at,
be based,
you
know, on your profit, not your gross.
Exactly. So we need some work on the definition of a small farm.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that at its core, we need that. We need people to be able to do small scale farming without having FDA or a new federal agency hanging over their shoulder. And one of the things I also talk about, and I think with your discussion of constitutional rights, is there's a Benjamin Franklin, I think it's Benjamin Franklin, who talks about trading security for liberty. And what I think actually is we keep being presented with the false choice. We aren't even being asked to trade security for liberty because the solutions they come up with don't offer security.
That's for certainly, that is completely true.
We're being asked to trade liberty for a soundbite.
Right, for government control, basically. Generally, some other control other than our own.
Exactly. We don't need farm to fork traceability. That's become their catchphrase for all of this pretty much. It's farm to fork.
Mm-hmm.
We need factory to fork traceability.
Mm-hmm.
Regulate the industrial facilities. Leave the family farms out of it.
Well, and because it's always been the backbone of our country's stability, which I think without the small farm, our nation is in jeopardy. I truly have always said that the barometer of our national security is in our food supply, and I believe that. Just like they know the barometer of literacy anywhere in the world is based on the tree line. It's kind of interesting. You know, where they've degraded the environment, they also oppress women. That was the point that they discovered. The World Watch found that out. I remember Lester Brown's group and others shared that information. So of the bills, then, you do a beautiful job, and I want to thank you, Judith. I don't know if it's because of your background in litigation, but it's so clear that there's that Senate Bill 425 requiring the FDA to create this traceability system. Then there's the SB 510, the FDA Food Safety and Modernization Act, and then the one H.R. 814, which is, what is that one?
H.R. 814 is a bill solely about the National Animal ID System, and it basically would push forward with a mandatory NAIS program.
What I don't understand, though, from what you've described, Judith, is how could it be effective if they can do a batch labeling of a massive poultry or cattle or whatever, and yet the small owner, the homeowner who might have product in their home or animals or whatever, I don't mean product, I don't like to think of animals as product, would have to label them. I don't understand how that works as a tracking system.
It doesn't. I mean, the answer is, I gave a speech once said why NACE won't work and why they don't care. This is about the export market. It's about profits for technology companies. It's about bureaucracies being able to increase their employment,
mm-hmm.
All of which they'll get whether or not the tracking actually works or not.
Right. Well, it's illogical. That's like saying you're going to keep an eye on all your nursery schoolers by calling them all Sarah.
That's a good comparison.
I don't know if it is. It came to mind, but it just seems it's lunacy, really. And that's what has always bothered me so much. And when I read the NAFTA and I read the GATT, and I haven't read these bills, I admit, in the past I would have read every bill we talked about tonight and know details that would keep me up at night. Maybe that's why I don't do it anymore. What overall is your major concern? You have said this interference, but are there issues now, like in Texas, that you, as some of the most independent people in the country, are already being challenged with your autonomy?
We have, because of the independent Texans, we have managed to push back enough to sort of hold these things in check. They aren't gone, but we've kept them sort of held in stasis. And so we're really, in some ways, on the same situation as a lot of the national. We're looking at what's happening in Congress. And I'm encouraging folks, and we actually have a membership all over the country. We're a national organization. We're encouraging all of our folks to contact Congress and really push for the concept of a small farm exemption, this idea that we don't need the federal agencies hanging over everyone's produce, you know, everyone's basket of carrots.
Well, again, the states do this. It's not as though there aren't really stringent regulations, inspections, and permitting and licensing that goes on in our state and counties, because it does.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The peanut butter factory, one of them at least, was here in Texas. And when I heard it hadn't been inspected for 10 years,
right,
the first thing that occurred to me was our local farmers market, I've seen state health inspectors there at least 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. There's this massive peanut factory in our state that hasn't seen an inspector in a decade.
Well, you know, it reminds me very much of what happened to healthcare, where the pediatricians used to make house calls and every child was treated differently. And then came the uniform vaccination and uniform this and that. Is that as things get industrialized, all practical sanity seems to go out the door with profit. And it's about the backroom deals oftentimes rather than health. And we've seen that with the increase in vaccination in our childhood population. It was not about improvement in childhood health, and we see how many childhood cancers and things now that may be connected, but that it was about the manufacturers who had successfully lobbied Congress to insist that the children receive these things.
Absolutely, and we see that in a pattern over and over in agriculture. And the other pattern we see, or at least I see, is this wanting just to turn their brain off. They want the easy answer. They want something that simply says, well, if you're worried about E. coli contamination of spinach, let's burn that 30-foot strip all around the farm.
You know, right. Let's denude the soil of its mineral and microbes and
exactly.
Worms and frogs and everything else that help things grow. So the notion of the scorched earth policy that was policy in Vietnam, and I've often talked about this, that the militarization of our medical system and our food system is not a far-fetched observation.
I agree. And it's also, it's the easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Slash and burn doesn't take a lot of intelligence.
Have you, as an attorney, seen any litigation by state owned farms or farms that are in a state against federal imposition where states have backed up an independent farm?
I haven't seen the state agencies or state governments backing up farmers, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're sympathetic, at least some of them are, but the FDA and the USDA have so much influence over them, in large part because they send so much funding to the state agencies.
That's like the highway and transportation federal. They blackmail the states into doing things, or they tell them they're not going to get their highway money.
Exactly. So, I mean, actually we've sort of seen is the reverse. I'm active with a group called the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and there have been quite a few lawsuits over raw milk and farmers being able to provide raw milk to consumers who want this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is state agencies cracking down on these farmers, and we have strong suspicions that, you know, when you trace back, it's because they're under pressure from FDA.
Right.
To come crack
well, you
down
know, on a
farmers.
Much broader scale, the marijuana issue is like just a perfect one where the federal government makes so much money by keeping it, you know, illegal so that they can steal people's property and liberty. And yet it's really a state right. So you go out to California and it's no longer criminal to get an ounce if, you know, whatever it is you're getting, or they're opening up coffee shops like they have in Amsterdam. And of course, for those who have been sick, it's always been very hard to get. And it's the same kind of thing where there's this, I don't know, a mindset that says the government knows best.
And get big or get out, which is the ag issue. And they've actually said that to farmers for decades. Get big or get out. There's a contempt for small farmers. There's a contempt for the idea of local sales.
Why, do you think?
You know, I'm not sure. I think certainly part of it is the old myth that, you know, it's the dumb farmer.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have brains, you get off the farm. If you don't have brains, you stay home and farm. And that's so backwards. It makes
and yet
me crazy.
The homesteading movement in this country has grown significantly in the last 10 years and is only going to increase as the economy gets worse. More and more people will grow food.
Absolutely. And we saw in the latest census, just in the last 5 years, double-digit growth in small farms. It's been amazing.
Well, I think a lot of us, myself included and my husband, we're now working on developing with the help of some wonderful people, you know, a very small farm. It's hardly a farm. We'll have some chickens and we're going to grow our own food, larger than my formal gardens in the past. But it's a beautiful lifestyle, actually.
Exactly. It reconnects you to where your food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It makes nourishing your body, it brings a whole new meaning to it.
I also think it makes you patient.
Mm-hmm.
I have found, unlike intellectual ideas and pursuits, which has been most of my life, including activism, it's ideas and they happen very quickly and you can create something very fast. You can turn out a press release, you know, a lecture, but you cannot plant a tomato seed if the ground is too wet and you cannot make them grow faster than they will.
Absolutely. It teaches you patience. But I also have to say one of the things I love about sustainable farming is the intellectual challenge.
Yeah. Well, that's true. It's a mystery.
As you start learning about the microbiology of the soil and the way the plants and the animals interact and you study it, I have better intellectual discussions with fellow sustainable farmers than I ever did with attorneys.
Well, I understand what you mean. Firstly, it's a heart-centeredness, and so many of the people we've worked with out of Acres USA and wonderful friends who have been so involved in these developments of consciousness, you know, it's very clear that all life, whether it's mineral, plant, animal, or human, operate in the field of consciousness. So it's all connected. And when we do this, it's not only good for our bodies, it's so good for the earth and all that and inhabit the earth.
Absolutely. And that is going back to the beginning. That's why this is so important. And it's every single person, whether they farm, whether they go to the farmers markets or not, the issue is this is what you're putting into your body. I mean, this is what builds your cells, literally. It's what your body is made of. And I can't think of anything more important or what should be more important to people than what's happening with their food supply.
We would think that, wouldn't we? I can remember arguing 25 years ago, why don't the hospitals have organic food? And people looked at me like I was, you know, the cross-eyed monster from Mars. Like, who is this nut, they would think. And fortunately now, even here in the state of Maryland, there is a group that would have finally this year, here we are, literally 25 years since I first brought that up, there is now some organic food options in some hospital systems. When you look across the landscape, because your organization, the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, does have national chapters, is there a different tone in the East Coast, West Coast, Mid-Atlantic? I mean, do you see that, you know, is the Midwest a different animal, so to speak, politically than the East Coast farm?
Oh, absolutely. And not just, I mean, there's a physical reality that's different. So, you know, when I talk with the Northeast people, which, I mean, I love so much of what happens in the Northeast in organics, but it's dealing with very high population densities, lots of small farms, lots of local market development. It's a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go out sort of to the Western ranches, and you have something very different. You have people who've been tied to the land for in many cases, generations.
Right.
And there really isn't a whole lot of opportunity for local markets when you have three times as many cows in South Dakota as there are people.
Oh, interesting.
You know, so you start realizing, well, we need to come up with different solutions. If we want sort of a sustainable farming in the broad sense of the word in the Dakotas and Nevada and Utah, it needs to mean something different than what it means in Massachusetts and New York.
And then along these foreign ownership lines, there's certain things that just never leave my I'm concerned list. How much of the large farming scale operations now are foreign owned? Is there any sort of cataloging listing that you've been able to get for that?
I haven't looked for it, actually. The only place I can think that we'd be able to find it would be the census.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, this became a huge issue in the beef world.
I remember
the cattle
that.
World,
yes, exactly.
Because of JBS Swift,
exactly.
Which is a Brazilian-owned company that was about to become the largest meat processor in this country. But more broadly than that, sort of getting those numbers across ag, I frankly don't know, I'm afraid.
Well, it's interesting, though. So that doesn't seem to be a big problem in Texas, then.
No, it's not. I don't think foreign ownership is a big problem in Texas. But what we do have, as much as we have independent farming and ranching, we also, for instance, have the second largest feedlot company in the entire country up in our panhandle. And we have huge confinement dairies coming in up in the panhandle area.
Do you have much of, just it's a little off subject, but one that I've always been involved in terms of animal husbandry and farming practices, factory farming, is just the brutality of the way the cattle are brought to slaughter. Are there strong activist groups in Texas that try to sort of minimalize the kind of basic torture that these animals go through?
We haven't had that historically. I'm hoping mm-hmm. to see more of that happening. And the difficulty with that, and I completely agree with you, I find the factory farms, they make me sick physically, mentally,
yeah,
emotionally.
That was how I first became a vegetarian, was visiting a factory farm. I couldn't even go into the slaughter area, of course. Just the smell was enough.
Yeah, they're really terrible. The problem is finding a way to find groups that care enough about it to put resources behind it, you know,
mm-hmm.
who care enough about improving animal welfare to try to fight for animal welfare without them being, you know, for instance, basically vegan religious.
Right, yes. Why aren't there ranchers who say it's not right for us to see this calf, you know, four legs split out because it's been trampled to death, or it's not right for us to not care if an animal's rolling around in the pits where they wait to be bought because it's been crippled by the way it got shoved out. I mean, when you see the documentaries, which thank God they're on the Sundance Channel, thank you to Robert Redford for having created this and all those that work on it, I mean, people can really see the reality.
Oh, absolutely. And there are ranchers. There are a lot of ranchers who think those are appalling things. The thing is, the ranchers themselves don't have a lot of resources to go pick that fight. And so they're going to put their resources on taking care of their animals. I mean, the ranchers and the farmers who believe strongly in animal welfare have very limited resources, and their resources go to taking care of their animals and making sure that their farms aren't like that, that their farms are humane areas. And so, you know, if there's going to be a change in the factory farm system, it's going to have to come from consumers.
Right. Well, and we see that in holistic medicine, which I've been involved in for 25 years, is that it is the consumer that has made that an over $7 billion out-of-pocket medical option. And I think we see that same now in organic farming, as it's become consumers who have made it possible for small farmers to have CSAs, community-sponsored agriculture. So it is growing. Look, we're almost out of time. Is there anything, Judith, we've not touched on that you want to be sure to share with our audience, or something you want to emphasize in particular before we say goodnight?
I just simply like to say, go do something with this information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if folks have been listening to this show, call your congressman, you know, pick up the phone tomorrow morning, don't delay, and call your congressman and start talking about these issues of supporting the small farms and the local agriculture.
And you said, and the simple way to describe it is you don't have to know bill numbers, though H.R. 75 has attracted the most attention, there are others, is simply say to have a small farm exemption from the new bills going through Congress for oversight on production.
Yeah, any food safety bill.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever food safety bill goes through Congress, I want it to exempt small farms and to support local agriculture.
That's easy. That's a simple lobbying handle. There you folks go. That's what we used to work on. What do I say? Well, that's what you say. You enjoy being able to buy produce from the local farms, and you think it's important to our states, and you know it's important for our national security if you want to get big and bold, but most important for your family. You want the choice, and they should exempt then the small farms. Well, I want to thank you for the work you're doing, and I would love to see some legislation somewhere, not legislation, a legal action where the feds come down on a local farm that the state then supports that farmer against the federal government. That would be, that kind of contest in the courts are the kind of contest to me that are the most important.
Absolutely. I think that has the potential to make a sea change in what's happening in agriculture if that were to happen.
Right. So we have to find a state whose governor is really aware, and I don't know if any, because I'm not really up anymore on who's governor where and how libertarian might one of them be. But if we could find a governor who's really aware of states' rights and understands that so many of these federal legislations are impositions on the autonomy of the state to make and keep its own laws, which is really the way it was designed to be, that we would have much more freedom in the long run. Well, you do a great job. And again, I want to encourage our audience to do what Judith said. Call your representatives. Take part in this wonderful legislative process we have in this country. Go to www.farmandranchfreedom.org for more information. And you can also call them at 1-866-687-6452. That's 1-866-687-6452. When we come back, a brief visit with Brenda Dozer, who's going to talk to us about a Reiki and wellness retreat coming up in May in Reisterstown, Maryland. You're no heaven. You're no heaven.
The views and opinions of the guests and hosts you hear are not necessarily those of the owners, management, or advertisers of Talk Radio 680. WCBM.
Where was Jesus from ages 12 to 30? The New Testament is silent, but in India, tradition says young Jesus lived with both Hindus and Buddhists before beginning his ministry. Jesus in India, Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
No matter who we are or what we do, our health is a priority. To stay well or to recover from an illness or injury, consider using options that are safe, natural, and in some cases, thousands of years old. From acupuncture to modern-day massage, counseling, and homeopathic medicine, the Ruscomb Mansions Community Health Center offers children and adults numerous health care and support services. Find out more about the Ruscomb Mansions yoga classes and weekend programs. Call 410-367-7300. That's 367-7300.
You're listening to 21st Century Radio with guest host Zohara Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Find us online at www.21stcenturyradio.com. Continuing with the theme of agriculture in the sense of what we eat and how we eat, what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves, and how we can take care of ourselves. The 5th Anniversary Reiki and Wellness Retreat will be held at the Pearlstone Conference and Retreat Center. By the way, they have a wonderful organic garden, and their food comes from the garden, and it is organic. It is open to all men and women, 18 and over. It is sponsored by our guest, Brenda Detzer, and you can find out more by staying with us for the next few moments. Brenda, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for asking me.
All right, so the 5th Anniversary Reiki and Wellness Retreat at the Pearlstone Conference and Retreat Center in Reisterstown, Maryland is May 29th, 30th, and 31st. Tell us about it.
Well, as you mentioned, it's open to all men and women, and we would certainly like to have more men. It's usually a minority. And it's not necessarily just for Reiki people, but that is who we primarily target, because the reason for it is that most of us are out there and we do healing work with everybody, and it's just a time for us to get away and take care of ourselves and learn some new information and just join together and have fun for the weekend.
So first Friday, you come in the afternoon, there's dinner from 6 to 7,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a meeting and greeting, and then there's an experience with Reiki and energy. Tell our audience very briefly, because we don't have much time, what Reiki is, because that is a component of your work.
Yes, it is. Reiki is actually a difficult thing to describe. It's an ancient form of what people are referring to now as energy healing or healing in the bioenergy field. And it can be done either with hands on or hands off of a person. And there are millions of us now in the United States doing this.
And even in some of our emergency rooms, like at the University of Maryland, they have
Absolutely.
Reiki practitioners. It's mm-hmm. been written about in the press. You know, when you see, and it's so, I'm so glad also for those that don't know, Brenda is one of our practitioners at the Ruscomb Mansion Community Health Center, and we celebrate our 25th anniversary this year. So when you see how far this work has come, when in the beginning, when we all began this work, you know, we were the kids, the new kids on the medical block, and now, thank God, it's becoming part of our understanding that all life talks. All right, so Saturday you have yoga, meditation, medical qigong, nature walk, something with Ann Hughes in the afternoon, introduction to soul collage. In the afternoon, we also know very well Brian Sandroff, who's a weekend broadcaster at WCBM Radio with Your Prescription for Health. He and Randy Botnick are going to present The Health of Emotions. What's that about?
Well, what they have told me is just that the emotions actually have a great deal to do with our health. They say, and I agree with them, that our thoughts determine how we feel and that our health is a direct reflection of those feelings. They either move through us or become stuck in our body. So they are going to be giving us some of the latest scientific mind-body medicine info to help us, as well as some healing tools and practices to
and
help us.
Earlier that day, I mentioned a gentleman named Carl Ardo will mm-hmm. teach medical qigong.
Yes. Carl, this will be the third year Carl's come. The people like him so much, they want him to come back all
oh,
the
good.
Time. Yes, he's pretty well known in the Maryland area, and he teaches at Thai Sophia, and he's around mostly around the Howard County area.
Wonderful. So you're, all of the presenters are a wonderful community of people. I am actually one of the presenters as well. It sounds
yeah,
a little
I'm
weird.
Hoping you would
we're
mention
all,
that.
We're all just great, you know? And I'm going to be there too. Well, people always ask me, are you doing anything publicly? And I do lots of things. I've done a great number of speaking engagements on my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets. But on Sunday, May 31st, from 9:15 to 10:45, I will give a presentation on the art of spiritual alignment, developing the capacity of prophecy and intuition. And it's based on really what the seven prophetesses taught me. So I look forward to doing that. And then there's lunch. And then a wonderful herbalist in Maryland who is also a provider at the Ruscomb Mansion Community Health Center.
And
Sarah.
My office mate.
Oh, is she? That's right. Sarah Eisenberg is going to present Renewing the Work of Creation, Celebrating and Caring for the Physical Body. So really, it's 2 days. Well, three, it's beginning Friday night. It's a bunch of good meals, all organic, wonderful food. And you'll be at a beautiful place, the Pearlstone Conference and Retreat Center in Reisterstown, Maryland. How do people register?
They can register by contacting me. I'll give you my all my information.
All right, please do.
But they can find it on the website, which is www.Eden, like the Garden of Eden, lifejourneys.com.
That's Eden Life Journeys with an S, mm-hmm. .com.
And there's actually a PDF file with a registration form.
Okay, again, this is for May 29th, 30th, and 31st.
And the email address, again, would be edenlifejourneys@aol.com.
edenlifejourneys@aol.com. So can people, if somebody's listening, they go, well, you know, I can't come to the whole thing. Is it possible to come to a day or a part of a day, or is this all or nothing?
No, it's not an all or nothing thing. We actually have commuters, several people are coming in from that general area, and they have a choice to come for all 3 days or Saturday and Sunday. Most people wouldn't come just for the Friday because that's basically just getting to know you time.
Right, and a nice evening and meeting people and mm-hmm. enjoying yourself and having a mini vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope people do get in touch with you and take part in a wonderful opportunity. Again, it's May 29th, 30th and 31st. It's the 5th anniversary Reiki and Wellness Retreat at the Pearlstone Conference and Retreat Center in Reisterstown, Maryland. You can go to www.edenlifejourneys.com or EdenLifeJourneys@AOL.com. Do you want to give out a phone number?
Yes, 410-242-6130.
That's 410-242-6130. And again, it's just a wonderful community of local talent, and I will be one of them, to really, you know, help people find tools that are in all of us that perhaps we haven't had the time to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, again. So I hope some of you will register for the May 29th, 30th, and 31st 5th Anniversary Reiki and Wellness Retreat at the Pearlstone Conference and Retreat Center. Again, you can call Brenda Detzer at 410-242-6130. That's 410-242-6130. I want to take a few moments with the time remaining. People have been emailing us and saying, well, you've listed so many bills. I don't know which one's the most important. What should I do? And I'd like to say the most important thing is not to call every congressman and every senator in our Congress. The most important thing to do is to know who your representative is from your county and your state senator, and to make calls to just those offices. You know, so often in federal action, citizens of the states get all tied up in just focusing, as they do in the elections, on the large electoral states. And it's a phenomena that happens in lobbying as well as voting. But I think states' rights and state citizen input and relationship with our local representatives and our federal representatives is the most important thing each one of us can do. But if you would like a recap of the bill numbers, I can certainly do that. And our last guest, Judith McGeary, made that very easy for me. And Laura Kortner, our executive producer, made it easy for me by gathering all these wonderful, talented spokespeople that we've had. So firstly, let me tell you, Steve Gilman of the Northeast Organic Farming Association joined us, and you can find them online, and I encourage you to, at www.nofa.org. That's nofa.org. It stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. All of these organizations give you talking points. They explain the legislation. They provide links. The internet has changed our lives in terms of activism, and it is such a blessed tool. Tony Corbo joined us. He's the senior lobbyist for Food and Water Watch. And you can find them online at www.foodandwaterwatch.com. That's www.foodandwaterwatch. Judith McGeary joined us. She's the executive director of the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, and they're at www.farmandranchfreedom.org. That's farmandranchfreedom.org. And the bills, let me turn my little pages here because I did write them all down in a nice little order for myself. Here we are. There was a Senate Bill 425 by Sherrod Brown, a Democrat of Ohio, requiring the FDA to create a traceability system. Again, these are all food safety bills. And what Judith recommended is when you call your senator or representative, simply say that you are concerned about food safety and you are in favor of food safety bills, but you want the small farms exempted. Because they're saying, and you heard her, these things even about tracking animals, that the large agribusiness factory farms will be exempt from tagging each animal. But if you happen to have 10 chickens in your backyard for your family and neighbor's eggs, you have to tag every chicken. So it's lunacy. It has nothing to do at all with tracking and safety. Again, another bill was SB 510. That's the FDA Food and Safety Modernization Act, introduced by Senator Durbin of Illinois. HR 814, introduced by Congressman Deanna DeJet, a Democrat of Colorado. That's the national ID system. The HR 759, the FDA Globalization Act of 2009, by Congressman Dingell, a Democrat of Michigan. The bill that has attracted the most hysterical and inaccurate emails, internet alerts, and fear-mongering. And I can appreciate that. You know, I have worked for so long in these fields and read so much legislation in my life at the local, national, and sometimes, unfortunately, world trade and other kinds of levels. But the truth is that it's always the unspecified elements in the bill that are the most frightening. And I think that some of the fear fear that has come out of this bill is what wasn't said as much as what is said. And there always is a possibility of the nationalization of farms. I mean, the nationalization of an economy we see right before us with the notion that there'll be government banks. There are virtually government banks. They're using our taxpayer dollars to shore up these banks. I mean, so nationalization is not that hard to appreciate as a real possibility in this country or as we've seen in any socialized nation. So there's a reason to be concerned. But when the fear spurns inaccurate information dissemination, then everybody's, reputation or credibility becomes at risk. So you want to be well-informed when you oppose something. Don't just do it out of fear because what if? Look at the facts and argue intelligently from that point of view. So H.R. 875, the activists we've interviewed this evening, Tony Corbo has had input in the bill. Steve Gilman of the Northeast Organic Farming Association has input in the bill. So they're at it, working on it. Rather than responding with fear, hate, and anger, I really promise you, after my decades of activism and now as a very mature middle-aged woman, I have found that activism with love is the only productive activism. And the kind of activism that points fingers and divides people and says it's them, it's the other, it's the government, it's the Congress, it's the this. They're all humans. They all have hearts. Most of them are intelligent to a degree enough that you can present information and hopefully change minds or be an addition. And as many of my teachers have said, one in particular said, try to make something new an addition every day in your life. So love in activism is the most important, successful, and effective activism that you can have. And having been myself an angry activism with angry bones for many years, it took a long time for that fire to burn out. And when it finally did, thank God, I could see that compassion for all of us is really what brings us together. So have compassion for those that might not see it your way. Try to argue intelligently with an open heart, and I think you'll find that you can make a change at whatever it is you're working on, no matter the issue. I thank everybody for being part of our audience tonight, and to all our guests, a big hurrah for the great work you all are doing. And let me encourage you all to remember that if you couldn't get it all down, you can find links to all our guests in our database at www.21st21stcenturyradio.com. Have a good evening, and God bless us all.
One love, one heart, let's get together and feel all right.
Hear the children crying.
One love.
Hear the children crying.
One heart.
The most powerful names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Baltimore.
From ABC.